Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello, and welcome back to Mum's the Word, the parenting podcast. I'm Kelsey Parker, and I'm your host for this week. So what has happened to me this week? Okay, so my friend Rosie is pregnant. I'm her birthing partner, and we have been waiting for this baby to come. I'm going to speak a lot about Rosie in today's episode with my guest, who I can't wait to announce who's on today. But yeah, it's just been the whole of the Easter holidays. We have been waiting for Rosie to have the baby. And also, Aurelia and Brody are loving Harry Potter at the moment. And Ron Weasley says bloody a lot. So Aurelia now keeps saying, when's Rosie having that bloody baby? I'm like, please don't go into school and say that. Anyway, that is my funny story of this week, guys. So today's guest on Mum's the Word is Pip Davies, better known as Midwife Pip on social media. She is an experienced midwife, podcaster, and most importantly, a mum. Pip is on a mission to ensure all expectant and new mums to feel like superwomen during their pregnancy and when they give birth. This year, she published her debut book, Midwife Pip's Guide to a Positive Birth. Welcome to the podcast, Pip. First of all, how's your 2024 going? How's everything for you? How's life? You're pregnant. How is everything?
It's beautiful chaos. Generally feeling very blessed to about to be a boy mum for the second time this year. And my book was officially published this month. So really exciting. Lots of positive energy happening in my world.
Oh, I'm all about positive energy.
Yeah, I feel like there can be a lot of lacking positivity. So sometimes we've just got to grab those simple things and big them up and make the most of them.
Yeah, all day long. Right, I'm going to talk to you about your book later. First of all, how did you become a midwife? What made you want to become a midwife? Tell me everything.
Honestly, I wanted to be a vet, and I still don't think my dad's forgiven me for the curveball that was then midwifery.
Sorry, Dad.
So I know. One day he'll forgive me, maybe. So the plan was I had a place in vet school, and then decided just before I was meant to go that I didn't really want to do it anymore. I didn't want to go all the way to Scotland, didn't want to study 7 years. Was like, it's not for me. Anyway, took a year out, had to have a bit of surgery in that time, met my now husband, and I was only 18 at the time. And so I was kind of finding who I even was. And his auntie just happened to be a midwife. And I thought, that sounds all right. Well,
I'll give it a go.
Have a go at that then.
Vet, midwife, yeah, do it. I'll do it.
And then I saw my first birth and was like, what is this? This is horrendous. What am I doing? Young 18-year-old me was like, this is not for me. Stuck it out and decided I actually quite liked it.
What put you off that first birth? What, when you were 18?
I was training in London. It was really busy unit. Poor lady that was like birthing in an assessment space. It wasn't even like a birth room. She didn't speak English. Her husband was on the phone updating the family. Then she made herself unconscious on the gas and air because she was like tiny. And it was just, I was still at the back of the room like,
what? Do a lot of people do that? Make themselves unconscious on the gas and air?
No, not at all. Everything that happened
in
that room
was rarity.
I feel
like my best friend Kelsey kept passing out. She was having gas and air and then was like, oh.
I mean, you can overdo it. You do need to have little breaks. But yeah, I think I just saw a lot of chaos all in one room as a young 18-year-old girl that didn't really know what she was going into because she was meant to be delivering lambs, not babies. But over the years, I've decided I absolutely adore my job and I got the best job in the world.
Well, I have actually had experience. I'm not a midwife. Obviously, I'm not a trained midwife. But I've actually been birthing partner now to my best friend, Kelsey, and my best friend, Rosie. I was actually Rosie's full on, like I was like her husband. But actually, I'm waiting now for Rosie to have her baby. She's actually overdue, but Rosie's very spiritual and she doesn't want to be induced. She wants to have this baby naturally. And she is waiting it out. She's coming on 43 weeks. What do you think about that?
I mean, I very much, do you know what? It's your body and your baby. So as long as women are making informed choices about their birth and what they want to happen, like, that's fine. It's no one else's decision. I feel like sometimes we put so many opinions on pregnancy and birth.
She literally just rang me when we were on the way, when I was on the way up here, and she was like, literally when my phone goes, like, I feel this knot in my stomach and it's making me anxious. But I'm like, but she said to the midwife, she's like, I want the best for my baby. And this is my journey. And this is how I feel like my path is. She basically doesn't want any intervention at all. She doesn't want an epidural. She doesn't want anything like that. She doesn't really want her waters broken. It's if this baby doesn't come at 44 weeks, she's going to do a selected C-section. That's how she feels. Obviously, it's very, we're now all conditioned, aren't we, I guess, to we have to do as we're told. But I did hypnobirthing for when I was pregnant with my first. And I feel like I've learned so much since then. But I feel like, as you know, as a mum, that when you go into birth, you feel like you're not in control and that you're being told what to do. But I feel like that's what you're trying to do, is give the women the power back.
100%. Like, it is your journey. And, you know, for some women, actually going past 38 weeks feels terrifying. So great. That's why we can support them. We have medical intervention to save lives. And thank goodness we do, because it's meant that we're in a time where childbirth is safer than ever for mums and babies. So that's incredible. But what's really important is that mums are empowered to make those informed choices for them and their baby, and that they feel in control. Because at the end of the day, it's our body. So if we say yes, something happens. If we say no, it doesn't. And it is actually that simple at the end of the day. So the control.
But do you feel like a lot of people do get pressured when they are in it? Like, not every midwife is like you. And I'm not, like, obviously saying all midwives are bad out there. But in situations that I've been in, even with Rosie the last time, she wanted to make her own informed decision. But there was a lot of pressure on us to do as we were told. But Rosie had done her own, like, she had a doula. They actually asked me if I was the doula. I was like, no, I'm not a doula. I just wear crystals and I'm a bit hippie. But she had done so much research. Like, I feel like Rosie could probably go and free birth if she wanted. How do you feel about free birth as well? What's your thoughts on free birth?
Again, it's up to women. We have to recognise that sometimes things don't go the way we plan.
Yeah.
And as long as mums are aware that, you know, if that happens in a free birth situation, the outcome for her and her baby is very different than it happens with medical professionals. And as long as she understands those risks and she's comfortable with those, that's fine. I think what's really important, and sometimes that missing piece of the puzzle, is actually how we portray information. It's really important that it's non-biased.
Yeah.
And also that women understand the pros, the cons, and what that looks like for them. Because the difficulty with Google searches is that you get general population information, but as we know, we're all unique. So actually what that statistic looks like for one person is really different to what it looks like for the other person. And so we need to be able to talk openly to kind of understand what that actually looks like for us and our birth journey and our baby, and sometimes actually just what the alternatives are. It's not black and white. You know, it's not be induced or off you go and hope for the best. Actually, what can we do in the interim to keep an eye on mums and babies and preserve that kind of safety element that ultimately your healthcare practitioners are really worried about? So, yeah, it's that communication piece that I think in the rushed system often kind of goes by the wayside a bit and doesn't help us out.
But is it quite rushed when you're actually on a ward in a hospital? Do you feel that pressure to that you've got to deliver these babies quite quickly, and it's a lot of pressure to get women in and out now. Do you feel like that, or is that not really?
So I'm a delivery suite sister. So I work in quite a senior position on a really busy unit where I'm overseeing the whole of that department. And in terms of birth, like, as midwives, we're trained in normality. What we want is for women to have physiological, uncomplicated births. It's better for everyone. It's easier for everybody. So we want to very much support that. And in that birth space, we don't feel that rush. Yes, we have to juggle beds and things like that, but we're never going to be trying to speed up birth because of those logistics. That's why sometimes hospitals close and we divert, because we know that that's the priority. Where I think that's felt more is in the postnatal space. And we know generationally, like if I talk to my mum, she was in hospital for like 2 weeks afterwards with me, just because that's what they did, so they could look after her and teach her how to bath a baby and all of those lovely supportive things. Whereas now it's like, if you're in hospital for 2 weeks, it's because you're in intensive care, like you're really sick, not because you're just getting lots of TLC. So I think that postnatal space is where we really feel that like rush almost to move women back home sometimes, and quite often before they're ready, especially when it comes to things like supporting breastfeeding for mums. I know often mums feel like, oh, I could have just done with, you know, more support or more time in hospital, but I felt a bit rushed out. I think we really feel that in that kind of post-birth space.
I do think first-time mums do need that. I think there should be like a rule, like when you first have the baby, you've got to stay in a nice room on your own, like a hotel suite, and then you can have people come in. And because I actually had my babies at Princess Royal, which is in Orpington, and they actually had a breastfeeding team. So they came round. I mean, I had my mum and she breastfed four children. So I had knowledge from my mum, which was incredible. And she was like, Kels, you can do this. I was actually really sick with my first child because I had preeclampsia. So I was very swollen, in a lot of pain. Probably did need to stay in hospital for longer, but I just wanted to get out. But the team were incredible because they came round. They helped me. We were actually getting in syringes, the first bit of milk, the colostrum, doing all that. And it was incredible. But because of funding, it's now gone. It's not there. And I'm like, oh, so many mums like would benefit from that. Like, I know I only had it for a day and I was like, this is incredible. Because sometimes as well, like when your mum's there, because my mum did have four kids, I was like, is she judging me? Is she looking? What does she think? This is really hard work. My boobs are really sore. But coming from someone else, they're like, no, you can do this. You've got this.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think we spend so much time, don't we, and so much government resource telling women how great breastfeeding is. And, you know, I feel like no one now would be surprised to hear there are benefits to breastfeeding. Like, it's out there, isn't it? We get the message. But what we're not doing is actually supporting people to do it. Like, there's this big, like, void. It's really, really great. And then there's no help to actually achieve it, which then causes all that mum guilt, you know, like all of that postnatal depression that we're seeing because mums can't feed in the way they want to, not because they actually physically can't, because no one's helping them.
Yeah, like, no one's helping. And you do need that extra bit of help. Like, my mum literally got my boob and got the baby and put, like, yeah, if someone watched me outside, they'd be like, oh, that's pretty brutal in there. But I needed that because I really wanted to do it. And I know that if I hadn't have done it, I would have been like, oh, my mum's breastfed four kids, why can't I do it? And to be fair, breastfeeding was such an amazing experience for me, but also it was easier for me because I am not a prepared person. I'm not going to be preparing bottles. I'm not going to be doing all that. For me, it was so easy to just have my boob and do that. I know that's not for everyone.
You can't forget it, can you? It's always on you.
No, you're like, oh yeah, milk, yeah.
I got that.
But it is that you're so right that we're telling everyone breastfeeding's amazing, but no one's showing women. And also, I just think that whatever you learn at school, when it actually comes to having the baby, it's like, it wasn't really like, and even the books that you've read, and you know, I know you've wrote a book, but I think there needs to be more positive birth books out there, because we watch like One Born Every Minute and this, and it is, you do watch it from the TV point of view, you're like, oh my God, birth looks really scary.
Yeah. And I'm about prepare, not scare, right? Because what we can't shy away from is the fact that in some hospitals, the cesarean section rate is almost 50%. We know the induction rate can be like 1 in 3. So what we can't do is just talk about normal physiological birth, because then we're disempowering like so much of the population. What we need to do is think about informed birth and positive birth in all light. So why might you need forceps? Why might that be recommended? And how can that be really positive? And how can you support your recovery? How can an unplanned emergency cesarean section still be really positive? And I think that's the big piece that's been missing. We see loads about like completely straightforward physiological birth, and that's amazing. And it's so many women's plan A. But then if that's not achieved, which is for a lot of women, they feel this sense of like being a failure or, you know, having had a really negative experience, and then they have birth trauma and postnatal depression and delayed bonding. So the kind of ethos in the space that I come from is actually, let's explore all birth. Let's put it all out on the table. All those fears, all those worries, tearing, induction, instrumental birth. Let's hash it out. Let's take it apart and unpick it and actually think, how can that still be a really positive, empowering experience? Because it absolutely can be, but we need to prepare for it. If we just kind of blink our eyes and think, no, I'm not doing any of that, then we put ourselves in a really vulnerable space.
Well, the magic is actually giving birth. Like, that is pure magic. However you do it, it is the most magical experience. And I think that's why when me and Rosie went in for her first baby, I think they were shocked that it was, I'm having a natural birth or it's a C-section. But that's only because the research Rosie did, and she didn't want drugs and anything in her. And they were shocked. They were like, what, you want a C-section? Actually, do you know what? When I watched it, she actually did have an amazing natural birth. She had a little bit of gas and air. And actually, the learning she did, knowledge is key. And I think that because she had this like beaded bracelet that went through every stage of labour. Have you ever seen one of them?
Yeah.
So she got to, she was like, oh, now I can remember. I was definitely at that point. And even for her, she did like a trick with her hip, and then this baby came out. And being there was so incredible. But again, even if we were in the theatre and that had happened, like, the magic is in within that baby coming out.
Women's bodies are like incredible, aren't they? Like, we are, sorry to big us up, but like, we're blooming awesome.
We
like
are.
What we're capable of. We are incredible. And I think
that's what I say to friends.
Understanding that is great.
Friends that haven't had babies and they're like, oh, like, we've not decided on a baby name yet. But I'm like, just wait. Wait until you've given birth, because you will be allowed what you want whenever you want it. Because he has just watched and gone, wow.
We are amazing. And I think for sometimes women actually just understanding how incredible our bodies are, and how our bodies and babies are literally designed for this event, and how they've adapted throughout that 9-ish months of pregnancy to accommodate birth, just starts to give you that confidence, which we need more, I think, for pregnant women. Because often we're told, you know, like, don't do this, don't lift that, don't move in this way, you know, you mustn't do this. And then we suddenly feel like this weaker, more vulnerable version of ourselves.
But we're
and then
not.
We're like, here's labour. Yeah. Here's this big, big old challenge that I've just told you you're incapable of.
My mum said to me, get to the gym, get working them leg muscles, because you will need them. Actually, I had the preeclampsia. I mean, the listeners would have heard this story about a million times, but I was so swollen, my legs had ballooned, and I felt like I was in like a sumo suit. And the midwife kept going to me, you need to get on your knees. I was like, I can't physically get on my legs, because you know where...
Don't even know where they are anymore.
Like, I didn't know where they were, and they wouldn't bend. Like, my legs wouldn't bend. I was like, I actually physically can't, because I can't move. That was obviously traumatic, but I think, again, for me, I'm not an overthinker. So I think even going through something so traumatic of the preeclampsia, I ended up in having forceps, tearing, being stitched, everything. But afterwards, I was like, I've got a baby, and now I've got to feed it, and now I've got to do this. Like, it was so, I didn't even think about the birth afterwards. I think it's now doing this podcast that I keep talking about birth. I'm like, oh yeah, thinking about it. Mine were actually quite traumatic, both my births.
And that's often the way. And often I find it's when women, if they've had one traumatic birth, when they conceive another pregnancy, they've kind of compartmentalized it. Because like you say, you're then into the next bit and the next phase, and you're managing everything else. And then when they recognize, oh, I've got to do that again, that's when some of those kind of weird fears and worries start to come back to the surface. And it's really important that we start doing work to stop women having traumatic birth, because we don't need to be living in this massive epidemic of birth trauma. And it saddens me.
But why? Why do you think that we are?
I think it's, I mean, it's definitely multifactorial. One is, I think we are fed sometimes a really unrealistic concept of birth. So, you know, I love positive birth books. I love positive birth stories. But we have to look outside of this one type of birth. And so often we are fed this one type of birth. There is a lack of education and information for women. It's all very surface level. You just can't prepare for the biggest day of your life through like a one day course or a couple of evenings. It's not enough. I would say think of the preparation we put into a holiday or a wedding because we know they're important. And yet for birth, we're like, I'll just rock up to this course for like an hour and then know everything and set myself up for the best journey. It's just not feasible. You'll get some useful information, but it's not enough. Like, we need to do more. We need to educate ourselves more. Sometimes I think we need to value it, because so often I work with second time mums who are like, I just can't do that again. And I wish I prepared better. So then they have a great experience second time, that we could have done that the first time. Like, it's so possible.
Do you have an insatiable fascination with the paranormal? Brace yourself, for the supernatural world is about to reveal all of its secrets on the Paranormal Activity Podcast. And who better to guide you through this hair-raising journey than myself, Yvette Fielding, renowned paranormal investigator. Every episode of Paranormal Activity takes you on an unforgettable adventure into the unknown. But that's not all. The true heart of this podcast lies in the stories, evidence, and questions shared by our devoted listeners. Will you dare to join me? Listen to Paranormal Activity with me, Yvette Fielding, wherever you get your podcasts from.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
I thought I was going to rock up and they were going to be fine. I'm not going to lie. I'll breeze it. I didn't breeze either of mine. Well, actually, Bodhi probably more so, but I was just in a traumatic situation during his birth. But the actual birth was, he was literally like a rocket. He just came and that was it. It was fantastic. I did get induced. But like, so all my friends are actually quite hippie. One of my other friends had a birth at home in a pool. And this was, do you know what? They were both my dreams. Both, I bought pools for both of my children and I didn't literally have one at home. I really dreamt of this amazing home birth, which never happened for me. But my friend did it. And watching it was like, she filmed it, obviously we'll film our births now and stuff like that. It was so amazing to watch, and it gave me the belief to go, oh, do you know what? Like, there is that out there, because everyone I speak to, and obviously I have a lot of people on here, that their births are just, it's just traumatic. It is traumatic. And then we're all suffering from that birth trauma.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I love what you say about the filming of the birth. Mine was accidentally filmed because I sat there in the pool. I was in a midwife-led unit, but in a pool. And I sat there and his head came out. And my midwife was like, Pip, can I just take a picture? Because you're literally sat there with your baby's head out, like smiling away. And it's just a really funny experience. Because you took a picture, but my phone was on live. So then as he then actually came out, and because I'd been so bossy and managed my whole labour, she was like, you might as well just live your own baby now. So she just had the phone, and because it was on live, we then found that actually it was a live photo. So we've got this like mini video of him being
So his head came out and you were just chilled there. So you'd gone through that part and they're like, so, but normal people are like, we've got to get the shoulders out. The shoulders are going to come. So then what did you just, because this is, Rosie's asked me, can she catch the baby when it is coming out? I'm like, Rosie, I've got a lot on the list of what I've got to do for you when this baby's coming.
No pressure.
No pressure. She's like, I really want to catch it. So how is she catching the baby? Tell me, how am I doing this?
So I did, but it's a little bit different because I'm a trained professional. So if there's, you know, if there's an issue,
if anyone's listening, don't catch your own child.
I'm not advocating everyone just lives their own babies.
But you can do it. If you want to do it, you can do it.
And I've supported women where, you know, like I've had my hands over them. So you can kind of guide it. Because it depends what position you're in as well. In the pool, it's generally easier because they kind of float out and you're just guiding them.
Yeah.
Whereas in different positions, like if you're on all fours, it's actually really hard to get into the right position. Like it's just awkward. So it depends on the position. But if there's something that's important to you, then have that conversation with your midwife. But just know that if there is a concern or a delay, then they might be like, okay, let's revert back. I need to support you a little bit more here. But it's, again, it's having those conversations and having them early, right? Because it's so much easier. Especially if you've had a bit of a slower start to labour, that you can have all these conversations at that point. Rather than waiting until the last minute.
Apart from if it's like 0 to 100 and then you're like, the baby's coming! Yeah. The baby's here!
As long as someone catches it, we're grand. Do you know what I mean? Like, at that stage.
What's been your favourite birth? I mean, look, I just love a question. I said to my followers, I was like, I'm just going to ask random questions because I love it. What's been your favourite birth to witness?
Oh, that's such a good question. I've seen so many. I suppose one that resonates with me the most is a lady that I supported who had a previous stillbirth experience, so really traumatic. And then I looked after her again and we kind of replicated that hands over hands that I just spoke about, because that's how I'd supported her with her first birth, because that was really important to her. But this time, obviously, when her baby was born, she was crying. And it was just, like, for all of us, it was just a really magical experience that's definitely one of those that's kind of stuck with me, I suppose.
Pip, I feel like you need to be at everyone's birth. I feel like you are so positive that if you walked in the room, I'd be like, right, that's it, I'm smashing this out. I'm actually going to smash it. Like, do you know when, like you're saying, the positive energy, like, people feed off people and you are, I can just tell, I'm like, right, I'm not pregnant, I'm not having a baby anytime soon, but if it came around...
We know where I am. No, I love it. I just think it's so important. Like, it's just, I think certainly for myself, having gone through my first birth just over 2 years ago, like, it shapes who you are. Like, it just shapes who you are as a woman. I'm completely different to the Pip that I was pre-children in a really positive way.
But even though that you'd experienced all them labours as well, like, having your own is just...
So different.
So different.
It's so different. Oh my gosh, I remember being at home, like when we first brought our son home, and you know, the newborn period is the period that I know a bit about, right? So that's when I was most confident. But we sat in the lounge eating a takeaway and I was like, oh gosh, what do we do now? Like, it's just so different when it's your own. I was like, we've actually got to like keep this one alive. Usually I hand them over.
And then it's down to their parents. It's down to whoever looking after them to sort them out.
I'm like, this one's staying with us.
Yeah, and I think that, like what I said, when I had a radio for the first time, I was like, I just didn't even worry about the birth. I was like, I've actually got to look after this human. I mean, she's four now and she's absolutely fantastic and full of life. But
good job, you.
Got her to four, fantastic, loving that. So what advice would you give to couples that have just felt pregnant? What would you say?
So first of all, start thinking from the beginning. So as early as possible, actually start preparing through your pregnancy, birth, and then into that early postnatal period. Because what we often see is forget about it, get to 32 weeks and think, oh gosh, I need to prepare for birth. But actually there's so much that you can do in pregnancy to improve the health of you, the health of your baby, and then set you up for the best place.
What would be health tips?
Oh, there's so much. I'm such a geek when it comes to pregnancy health.
I'm here for it.
So things like, So things like your gut health in pregnancy has a direct link to reducing asthma, eczema, allergies in children. Like there's direct scientific links between that and improving maternal mental health and so many things. Certain nutrients we can eat that can improve your child's IQ levels and literacy skills at school later on because of all that early brain development that happens in the early stages of pregnancy. So often when we think like, just prepare for birth later on, we miss this massive chunk of pregnancy where actually we can really do things to optimize it. And then it adds to that feeling of how empowered we are as women going into birth, because look what we've done. Like we've done this in our pregnancy, done this in our pregnancy. So actually you just go into that place in a much stronger place psychologically. So that's some of my like, actually get educated on what you can actively be doing in pregnancy. Exercise is a massive one. You know, you've had two children. Birth, postpartum, huge physical events in our body, like the ultimate marathon. And there is no finish point. Takes a long time. It's a proper endurance event. So actually making sure that you're exercising not just safely for pregnancy and postpartum, but actually specifically, because there's no other time in our lives when our goals are as specific as they are in pregnancy and the postpartum. Like your organs are literally relocating in pregnancy. It's kind of a big deal. So there's lots of stuff that you can do to help support that. We don't just need to live with pelvic girdle pain. It's very much a manageable and treatable condition. So many women that are hobbling around like, oh, it's just because I'm pregnant. It's because I've got an unstable pelvis. If our pelvises were unstable, we wouldn't be carrying humans. Like it's such a stable structure. It's the biggest load of rubbish out there. And it's a bit of like a cop out, I think, just like palming women off. So actually, yeah, getting educated, getting yourself empowered and understanding what you can proactively do from as early as possible in pregnancy. It's never too soon. It's never too late. But the sooner we do it, the better.
But I think that's even from trying. Like, make yourselves as healthy as possible to try and have a baby. I actually detoxed for 8 weeks before I fell pregnant with Aurelia. And I fell so quickly because my body had cleaned out. Like, I cut sugar out. I cut just stuff in my diet that I didn't need. I put the McDonald's away. Do you know what I mean? I just really went for it. I only drank water. I actually then did 8 weeks, went to Vegas, and what happens in Vegas doesn't stay there.
Bring back a baby.
Yeah, I brought back a baby. But literally, I prepared myself for even getting pregnant, then during obviously the pregnancy, and I did train the whole time, not to be like, oh, but for me, it was mentally, I needed to train and exercise. I know now that connection, it makes me feel better when I'm training and exercising. But like when you said before that people think, oh, I can't lift anything, I can't do this, I can't do that. But you are growing human. You can do whatever you want.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's really empowering for women to start shifting that. I remember not so much this pregnancy, but my last pregnancy, I was peak marathon training when I fell pregnant. So I ran loads and loads in pregnancy. And my mum was absolutely mortified. And my mother-in-law, they were like, you need to stop doing that. And I was like, no, things have changed. Things have changed.
You can do what you want now.
Yeah. And I really hope, you know, we're getting there. There's still work to be done, but we are getting that with that message. But I really hope for the next generation, that's where we'll see that kind of big old shift in things. But yeah, definitely that trying to conceive period. I know, you know, pregnancies are unplanned sometimes. But if you are planning a pregnancy, ideally, we say 12 weeks prior. Really start thinking about lifestyle changes, folic acid, vitamin D, all of those kind of things, gut health. And we know that, you know, that period's really powerful because when you do conceive a baby and in the first trimester, if you're anything like me, you eat beige food and chicken nuggets, actually, that isn't the nutrition that's going through to your baby because you don't have a placenta yet. What's going to your baby is what's in the yolk sac. And that nutrient is what you were consuming prior to getting pregnant. So if you then find yourself like me avoiding all vegetables.
You've got 12 weeks to eat what you want. Yeah. Then start eating
exactly.
The good.
Exactly. So then you can, start actually not feeling guilty that in your first trimester, you're just surviving on, you know, salt and vinegar crisps or whatever it is.
I wanted just chips with loads of salt and vinegar on them for Bodhi. I was like, yeah, more vinegar, more salt. Give it to me.
It is, and it's nuts, isn't it?
That Aurelia was cake. Give me cake. Give me cake. Give me. I literally was that. They say sweet, don't they, for girls? I really craved sweet. And then for Bodhi, it was chips, crisps, salt and vinegar. Just, yeah, beige food.
I was beige. So this is my second boy, and both boys were beige. Beige, salty, plain. Finley was basically grown on chicken nuggets, but he's doing all right for it.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. So you've looked into all this. How intelligent is your child? Have we tested his IQ yet? Has it worked? That's what I want to know.
Second trimester, I was back on the salmon. We're all good. We're all good.
Fantastic.
But it's taking that pressure off if you know you can do something beforehand. So yeah, using that trying to conceive time is really, really powerful.
We don't give ourselves enough time to conceive as well. I think there's so much pressure. I want a baby, I want a baby, I want a baby. And like you're saying, you know, it can take time. Like, I think give yourself like a year, 2 years, especially like if you've been on contraception, whatever you've been doing, your body needs to detox and clear it all out. So if anyone's listening and is having that worry, like, you have got time. There is time.
I think as women, we feel that pressure, don't we? Especially because so often now, like, we're starting families a bit later in life, if you've, you know, had your career first and things like that. But then you suddenly feel that pressure of, oh my goodness, you know, what if I can't conceive? And it's really great that we're starting to talk more about things like miscarriage and, you know, IVF and assisted conception. It's fantastic to raise all that awareness. But I think then for women that are on that journey there, they then feel that anxiety because we're more aware that actually perhaps we won't just suddenly decide, I want to get pregnant and that's it. And it's so funny, isn't it? We spend so many years trying not to get pregnant and then we spend so many years trying to get pregnant.
And then you have the baby, you're like, what did I do? No, joking. Only a joke.
There's definitely moments of that.
So tell me the book. Tell me where I can get it from, everything about the book. Because I feel like I need to just tell everyone about it.
Oh, I feel like it's been my biggest baby this year. I kept forgetting what month the book was coming out and what month the baby was due. Because to be honest, they've been equally hard work. So
you're it's like, baby book.
Yeah, which one? Midwife Pip's Guide to a Positive Birth. You can get it on Amazon, you can get it on Waterstones. It's available on Kindle and Audible as well if you prefer listening to books rather than reading them. But the idea is it's really a guide. So it's more than just a book, but actually it's a guide to take you through all of that preparation that you really need for birth. And I went about 20,000 words over the publisher's word count because it was really important to me that it had the detail that I feel is generally lacking in the birth space when it comes to books and things. So, for example, there's a whole chapter on birth after previous cesarean section, a whole chapter on induction of labour and why that might be offered for different things like IVF, age, big baby, all of that kind of stuff, so that we really get more into those details that women need, because without that information, you're not making an informed choice. Like, if we don't have the information, we can't make that choice. And there's lots of checklists, there's QR codes, little video resources in there. So really kind of holding a hand to make sure you've got all of those tools and techniques in your little labor and birth toolbox to make sure that your birth is positive and is empowering, no matter what that looks like. You know, whatever that birth looks like, actually your birth can be a really, really important positive experience.
And what I think about birth is ask questions. If you were going to go and buy a house, you wouldn't just walk into the house and go, okay, yep, could I have it?
Yeah, I love this one.
Yep, take it. You ask questions. For any midwife, I think they've heard it all. Your question will never be stupid. Literally, whatever you feel, ask it. And I think it's so important to keep asking questions and speaking, because some people, I think, go in and think, I can't say anything. Like, that's it. Like, they know what they're doing and I can't ask anything. But I feel, especially talking to you, that you'd want the question about how they're actually feeling, because by a question, you can see where they're at.
Yeah. And sometimes, you know, I think I've told someone, I think I really explained some procedure beautifully, but actually I've forgotten that those words that are normal for me are brand new to them. So like, what is that thing? And I'm like, oh yeah, you just haven't realized. So always ask, always communicate. The hospitals that midwives work in aren't there. You know, this is not coming into our house. This is a mutual space. So that space is yours. You do whatever you like with it. You know, don't feel like you're coming into someone else's environment. It's just like our office, you know, it's equal. So you come in and create what you want, ask what you want. You know, it's your day, it's your space. And it's so important that it is that way.
Amazing. Thank you so much for coming on. I've literally loved this conversation and I feel that you are going to empower so many people with this conversation. And I'm so happy that we've got to do this together. But honestly, I think you are incredible.
Oh, thank you. I'm a proper birth geek and I could definitely talk about birth all day long.
Oh, I love it. Thank you so much. Do you have a question you want me and my guest to answer? Get in touch by emailing askmumsthewordpod@gmail.com or leave us a voicemail on WhatsApp. Our number is 07-599-927-537 or leave it as a review on Apple Podcasts. Make sure you hit the subscribe or follow button so you never miss an episode. If you're listening on Apple Podcasts, then please leave us a review and a 5-star rating. It helps others find us. And talking of spreading the news, please tell another person about the podcast and help us reach more people. So I've been Kelsey Parker. You can find me on being_Kelsey on Instagram, where I'm just being me. We'll be back with another episode, same time, same place, next week. Thanks for listening.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.